Get ready to drop the puck, take a free throw, and step up to the plate. It's time for the Metro East Sports Podcast on lineupmedia.fm.
From the Lineup Media Studios, welcome to the Metro East Sports Podcast, Season 2, Show Number 5, recorded February 22nd, 2021. Did I say February? Weird there. Did I say February? You tell me, Chris.
Yeah, you're okay. You're okay, Dave.
Thanks to partners Castens & Sons, Pin Oak Agency, Keller Williams Marquee, Jeb and Ginger Blasting Game. We're talking all things sports in the Metro East. I'm Dave Leip alongside
Chris Mitchell,
former
WashU SID, former Duke intern, and
Hall of Fame member at McHenry.
Yes, sir. Played a little tennis back in the day, as I know you did too.
You were the man. Three things. You still are the man.
No, you're the man. You got 800 plus wins on the tennis courts. You have 800 more wins than I do coaching tennis.
Got a few losses.
Yeah, but as Rick Lesman, former WashU baseball coach in the 80s, he's 80 years old, Dave, and he used to tell me, I got more wins than anybody, but I also have more losses than anybody.
You know who else said that? Dick Trickle.
Dick Trickle?
Dick Trickle, you said that all the time. He had the most wins, dirt track wins, in the history of car racing.
I watched some NASCAR this past week too. Love a little NASCAR.
Are you a fan?
I'm becoming a fan a little bit more because I'm in a fantasy NASCAR league now.
There you go.
With the WashU men's basketball coach right now. I love it actually.
Who are you rooting for?
I like Chase Elliott a lot, but I'm a big Denny Hamlin fan. Number 11.
Awesome. I think the way them Chevys are set up this year, they really got a strong chance.
Dave, you got to make sure and have the lug nuts nice and tight because you don't want your tire falling off.
Three things you can do to help. Number one, subscribe. Did you know it's free to subscribe to the Metro Esports Podcast? Number two, follow us in all of our social media platforms. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on the gram. And yep. Please, if you have a story idea, email me at mespdave@gmail.com. Big show today, Chris.
I am impressed that you called it the gram because that's what the kids call it.
Dave. I know. That's why I did it. I totally did that. I do it every week because I'm trying to sound cool. I don't know anything else cool to say.
Well, you're one for one today.
At 54 years old, I'll take it.
There you go.
Guest number four today, Jeff Creek. Belleville East boys basketball, and they're hot.
They are hot. They're 5-0 right now. We're going to talk some hoops with Jeff.
Guest number three, John DePriest, Sunset Hills Country Club golf pro extraordinary.
It's a beautiful course, and you know, you see the weather today and tomorrow, it makes you want to go hit some golf balls.
He's more than a golf pro. He does a lot for kids, and he does a lot for a lot of people, as you will hear. Guest number two, Brad Fiore, hiker. He's hiked all these trails. He has circumnavigated the United States by bicycle.
I'm really looking forward to meeting him and hear his story. Obviously, Jeff Creek, and you know, a great season so far, and I know the sport of basketball. I'm really looking forward to meeting Brad and hear his story because I'm sure we'll both learn many things in that interview.
And he's got a 3,100-mile walking trip planned. 3,100 miles. But guest number one is back. He is the most popular guest. He's the only guest who's been here three times. Welcome back, Andy Callaway.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm kind of like Saturday Night Live.
One of those like Bieber.
Bieber, maybe.
Steve Martin.
Or what's the other guy? Alec Baldwin. He's on there a lot.
Justin,
right?
Timberland.
Timberland. There you go. There you go. Well, thanks for having me on again.
Well, you're still a partner. You've been a partner since the get-go. Since you go back to the beginning of the Metro Esports Podcast, and we've been talking about certain things, but we've got a new focus with you, Callaway Home Mortgage.
Yeah, Callaway Home Loans. You know, we're helping people make their mortgages easier, more affordable, and faster. So I've been helping quite a few people in the community. I think I helped you, Dave.
You helped me. Yeah. You helped me save money every single month.
Yeah, so rates have ticked up a little bit, but refinances are still out there. There's still plenty of people that have a rate, you know, in the high threes or the fours who could benefit from a refinance. The home purchase market is hot right now. So if you're getting ready to look to buy a home, call me. I can get you pre-approved.
How do they call you? What's your phone number?
618 830-3332. That's my personal cell phone. You can catch me right there. Or you can get me on my website. It's CallawayHomeLoans.com. But the best way is just shoot me a text or call me, okay? I'm always available. And we have some exciting news to share related to the podcast.
The best part of it, he will save you money monthly. He will save you money long-term. And he is going to write a check to the local Metro East high school team, junior high team, or general athletic fund of your choice if you refinance with Andy. So if it's Belleville West cheerleading, Marquette golf, Granite City wrestling, you pick your favorite program, and Andy will write a check to them for $100.
Yeah, so long as you have a non-for-profit, so if your booster club set up as a non-for-profit or your organization, we will write a check in your name from my company. And then we're going to have a little bit of a sweetener on this. If we get five folks from your organization that mention your organization and we make a donation for, we'll actually double the donation. So five folks come in, we'll write another check on the fifth person that closes for an additional $500.
That means $1K.
$1K, right, to your organization. And all you have to do is give me a call and see if you can benefit from a refinance. Or if you're buying a home, you know, I can help you there too. So it'll be a real honor to me.
So if your son or daughter is currently playing whatever in the Metro East for whatever school, middle school or high school, or it can just go right to the General Athletic Fund. And if your son or daughter is still there, great. If not, if you still want to give something back, do it through Andy. Save yourself money, earn a little money for your favorite Metro East sports program.
Exactly. Well, give me a call, 618-830-3332. I'd love to talk to you and help you with your mortgage. And, Dave, thanks for having me on again.
Good to see you, bud.
All right, thank you.
Well, that was cool, Andy, to come by again. Third time on the show. He leads the league. I got you right in the middle of a drink of tea, huh? You're on. Next guest. First guest of the day. We got a man of many talents and interests. A man who has walked the Pacific Crest Trail, the Appalachian Trail. He has circumnavigated the U.S. by bicycle. He's planning a 3,100-mile hike, walk. Welcome to the show, Brad Fiore and his friend, Shane Isbell. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hey. Thank you. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. It's great to see you.
Great to be here.
So where do we start with you?
Let's start a little bit about me. Name's Brad Fiore, originally from Staunton, Illinois. I was born there, raised there, raised my family there, lived there for 40-plus years. Decided to move on, did a couple-year stint in Bunker Hill, and since then I've lived in Edwardsville.
But you had a major shift in your life and what you wanted to do, in that you retired early and set out to, what was your goal, to walk all the major trails?
No, it never was that. Really, my major goal was just to start living life. And I found that in cycling originally. And I originally just wanted to cycle across the country. Thousands of people have done that. I wanted to do something a little different. I didn't know it was going to be pedal the perimeter. But that's what it turned into. But you just don't pedal the perimeter. And you just don't, go in your garage and dust off the old Schwinn bicycle and like, hey, I'm going to, you know, cycle 12,000 miles around the United States. I've trained, been a cyclist since 1998 up to the present day. I still cycle 40 miles a day. So I called the cyclery here in Edwardsville. I researched the bike I wanted. I wanted a Trek 920, which is a touring bike. It's lightweight. It's heavy duty. It's a long distance cycling bike. So the people at the cyclery are great. They set me up. I picked the bike up. It was January. I was bored. I retired to do fun stuff, crazy stuff, out of the ordinary stuff. So I had a friend take me to Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. He took me out there. He asked me what I was going to do. I said, I don't know. I think I'm just going to ride down to Key West. He's like, do you want me to come pick you up in Key West? I was like, no, you know, I'll make my way back. You know, so you
rode your bike from West Virginia to Key West, and then you just kept going. You went south around the Gulf of Mexico and then all the way out to California?
Absolutely. I started in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, rode across Northern Virginia to the Outer Banks in North Carolina, all the way down the Outer Banks of North Carolina, South Carolina, all along the coast. When you do pedal perimeter, you got to stick to as close as you can to the borders of the United States. So I went through South Carolina, through Savannah, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, the east coast of Florida, all the way down to Key West, did a U-turn. All the way back up to
But hang on, you weren't even planning on doing this initially. You just kind of did this. Your initial plan was just to go to Key West. And then once you got to Key West, you thought, eh, I'll keep going.
Absolutely. Yes. I wasn't totally sure I was going to pedal the perimeter until I got probably down to South Padre Island, Texas. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to make it across the country.
Because most people would have planned this out with the seasons to make sure that they were going to be. Because I got to imagine that that northern perimeter – next to Canada. What was that like? And when were you there? What months?
I didn't go to the northern, what they call the northern tier cycling route. I didn't get there till June.
Okay.
I arrived, I actually biked all the way out to Seattle. I got to Seattle like on April 2nd. I had to come home because they just had a blizzard in North Dakota. So I came home, I called my friend Shane. I was like, hey, what are you doing next week? And she's like, I'm not really sure. I was like, let's go hike a section of the Appalachian Trail.
Shane, who's here?
Yes.
Welcome to the show, Shane.
Thank you.
We're going to let you talk a little bit. So what's your role in all this?
I'm just more or less, I've done a few trips with him, hiked a little bit, biked a little bit, but on his solo trips, I'm behind the scenes.
Are you like behind the scenes, like in a van a couple miles away, or
no,
you're all the way back here?
Unsupported. Everything I do, I'm at home.
Yeah, everything I do is unsupported.
Okay, so what year was this circumnavigation of the U.S.? What year was that?
2018. January 2018, I started.
And how long did it take you total?
4 months.
That's it.
4 months. People who are cycling fans who are on the podcast, that listen to the podcast, I was cycling a century ride every day, 100 miles a day on a bicycle. I averaged 96.7 miles a day. My longest day was in Montana. I cycled 174 miles.
Holy.
My shortest day was 29 miles around Bemidji, Minnesota.
How many days did you take off?
Probably 3 or 4
Wow.
Days out of the 4 months. Every day. Late. Basically 100 miles. I mean, I rode over 100 miles. I couldn't
Lazy.
Tell you how many
Why
times.
Are you taking those days off?
I know. Actually, I got caught in Sanderson, Texas. A high wind day. I actually took 2 days off there, back to back. Because you get out in West Texas, there's nothing out there. So I took 2 days off there. It was a crazy ride. I could go into story after story about the people I've met along the way, but we'd be here all night if I told every story.
I got time.
Brad, how'd your body recover each day? You know, what was the recovery process like at night?
I'm an older fella. I'm 52. At the time, I was 49. I retired. I've got a little more money than the younger people. So I stayed in hotels every night. So I was able to get the proper food, nutrition, rest on it, sleep in a comfortable bed, you know, and then the next day it was up and go.
What, did you get going early in the morning?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. First light every morning. Was done cycling. I probably did 100 miles in 8 hours. I'd stop an hour at a local gas station, grocery store. A lot of times grab a couple Monster drinks. At least one, not two. That's too many. One Monster drink, and away I went. I try to cycle most of the miles in the morning, say from, you know, sunrise to noon. Usually try to have like 70, 75 miles in and do like 25 miles in the afternoon.
Wow.
In many days, my average was 96.7, but many days, like when I was biking across South Florida, I went from Miami to Bradenton, which is 168 miles, I believe. By road in 1 day. And I'm not on a road bike. My Trek 920, it's the best way to describe it to the listeners is it's a mountain bike with road horns on it. So it's got mountain bike tires. I am not riding a bike with the thin road wheels. This is a mountain bike. And it's got saddlebags on it with my gear, my iPad, everything I need. Extra tires, extra thing. Because I'm unsupported. It's just me out there. You know, if I get a flat tire, I got to fix it. Which is amazing because I rode, actually my ride was 11,338 miles. And I didn't have one flat tire the whole time.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it? No, I never had to pull over for a flat tire.
Had you always spent so much time by yourself or was this a unique experience for you?
I had rode the Katy Trail 2 different times by myself.
So you had some experience with solitude.
I've been to Peru by myself and hiked in Peru, mountain biked in Peru. But this was really my first big journey by myself. like me and Shane, we have rode the MRT together, the Mississippi River Trail. It runs from Lake Itasca, and we only rode half of it. We rode from Lake Itasca to St. Louis. We've rode around Iceland. We've rode Vietnam.
I saw the Iceland picture. Yeah. I saw the Iceland picture. So how, what, you know, this guy wants to go 100 miles a day. What about you, Shane? When are you done? You like, I'm good on 30.
He doesn't tell me. I don't get the scoop for the day.
Really?
Yes. I don't want to know the terrain. I don't want to know how many miles. I just hop on my bike and
ride. Is she a trooper? Or is she like, come on, are we there yet?
I'll give her every bit of credit. There's not many people that could do the adventures she has done with me. And we do go a little more relaxed. Like, we went to Vietnam. It was more to experience the culture and bike like 60 miles a day average. You know, bike from Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City, it's called now, to Hanoi, and then we went up to the Chinese border. But those are more relaxing. Iceland was more relaxing. It was a 50, 60-mile day. But we lived out of a tent for 2 weeks when we went to Iceland.
So. Talking to Brad Fiore and Shane Isbell, and you're getting ready to go on a 3,100-mile walking trip.
Yes. I'm trying to commit to complete the Triple Crown of hiking. I know most Midwesterners or outside the hiking community will not know what that means. I mean, there's a Triple Crown of horse racing. You know, what is it? The Preakness, the Belmont, and the Kentucky Derby. If a horse wins that, it's called the Triple Crown. But the hiking community has the Triple Crown of hiking. You've got to complete every mile of the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail.
So you just lack the Continental Divide.
Yes, I'm 2/3 of the way there. I've done the, I can give you a little background on the Appalachian Trail. I've completed the 2,192-mile Appalachian Trail. I completed that in 2019. I finally finished it, I should say. I completed it in several sections, but I completed the last bulk of it in 2019. 2020, I was out to the Pacific Crest Trail, which runs from Campo, California, on the Mexican border, which is about 50 miles east of San Diego, and it runs all the way to the Canadian border. Goes to California, Oregon, and Washington. And it's 2,652 miles long, all walking, hitchhiking, resupply in town.
You can hitchhike?
Oh, I'm a professional hitchhiker. That's how you get to town. The trail, the trail is so out there. You know, you're either in a national park, national wilderness. So when you come to a road and you're out of food, I just throw the thumb up and get to the nearest town.
Sissy Hankshaw's got nothing on this guy. If you've ever read Tom Robbins' famous book, even Cowgirls Get the Blues, with the world's greatest hitchhiker in it. But
yes. And when I got Shane with me and she's hiking, because she's done 500 miles of the Appalachian Trail. And Shane puts me to shame when it comes to hitchhiking.
I get thrown on the street.
I bet.
Back to the Appalachian Trail. It runs from Springer Mountain, Georgia, to Mount Katahdin in Maine. It runs through 14 states up the East Coast, the Tennessee-North Carolina border. Goes up to the Smoky Mountains. Have you ever been to Gatlinburg, maybe, people? Out there have been to Gatlinburg. It runs about 14 miles outside the city limits of Gatlinburg. And like I said, up through 14 states. And it's amazing. The AT is called the Green Tunnel. That's what hikers call it because it's a lot of national forest. You don't get any big views. When you climb a mountain, you get that big view. Now, the Pacific Crest, the first 700 miles is all desert. And I don't want to deceive people that it's like the Sierra Desert. It's Southern California desert. It's a scrub brush, but it is absolutely beautiful. I mean, you get views that are crazy. You climb some of the highest mountains in Southern California, and Mount San Jacinto and Mount Baden Powell. They're above 10,000 feet.
Are you camping throughout all this every night?
Absolutely. In a tent. I carry about 32 pounds on my back when I'm fully loaded with food and gear. And that goes down as you eat your food down. I'd say my what they call base weight is probably about 20 pounds. That would be my tent, sleeping bag, extra clothes. Really not extra clothes. I would say winter gear because you wear the same clothes every day. You know, you don't think about it unless you're a hiker, but every ounce counts. You got that every ounce is on your back. And the less weight you carry, the farther you can travel every day. And I average no less than 20 miles a day. My highest mileage day, I walked 41 miles in the Hat Creek Rim of California, which is just south of Mount Shasta. And I couldn't even tell you what my lowest miles a day was. It's probably 2.
How do you answer the people that say, Brad, why?
You know, I actually discovered something while I was out there. Wow, I'm going to tear up here when I say that. You know, you go out there to hike, and it's just all about hiking and miles and everything. But it's really, yeah, I've discovered the kindness humanity out there. Biking, people always wanted to help me. Hiking, the hitchhiking. And I've spent nights in people's homes that I didn't even know, you know, and they've become friends of mine. Still got a great friend that lives out in Scottsdale. It's just, Shane, is it a different community? You've been in the hiking community.
Everyone is amazing. Yes. Even going to different countries and people see us and talk to us. It's great. Yeah. We have a great time.
When we were in Vietnam, I mean, we spent 10-year conflict there. Everybody loved Americans there. Everybody. Everybody wanted a picture with us, mostly Shane because she's blonde hair. But no, everybody wanted a picture of us. We went up to the Chinese border. We were like rock stars up there as far as people went.
There was a line of people waiting to get their picture with us at the Chinese border. It was crazy.
Yes.
So do we have an update here? It says online 440 hikers have completed the Triple Crown. You know what that number's up to now?
Yeah, the last time I checked, and you're probably more accurate, 400. I thought it was more around 600. And on the circumnavigating of the United States, there's no group or organization that keeps track of the hiking community or the cycling community when you do stuff like this. They mainly, it's an honor system. You know, if you say you did it, people just take your word for it. You did it. It's the honor system that the cyclists and the hikers are all about. But the cycling, I'm not even sure 250 people have circumnavigated the United States by bicycle. Now, the Triple Crown, it's about 400 to 600 people. And to circumnavigate the United States and do the Triple Crown, I may be the only person that's done that.
I mean,
I'm not sure. That is not official, but
I walked from Wilson Park to McDonald's one time when I was a kid, you know, to get a cheeseburger. You know, I was playing tennis and I walked all the way there. I was so tired.
And then you had to walk back through the snow too.
Right.
Yeah. And the Continental Divide, like you had said earlier, Dave, it's 3,100 miles. It runs from Crazy Cook, New Mexico, which is not a town. It's just a monument out in the U.S.-Mexican border. I'll get brought down to there. And I'll just start walking northbound to Glacier National Park in Montana, and that's where the trail terminates at the Canadian border.
Are you a reader? Are you taking books with you? No.
No.
You're just talking. You're hanging out. You're in your thoughts.
In my thoughts. Exactly. Well put.
And can you have a cell phone with you? Can you charge a cell phone? How does that work?
Absolutely. I carry a battery bank with me. That will charge my phone about three times, but I put my phone on airplane mode only to look at my map. That's how I navigate. It's an app called Gut Hooks is what the hikers use. It shows the trail. It's an offline map. It'll show exactly where you're at, where water's at, where the roads are at, where the towns are at. And you can just click on it. Like if I see a water signal up ahead of the trail, all I got to do is tap that. It'll be like you're 21.2 miles from that water source.
Any close calls you care to tell us about, like, were a time where you were sick or you had to jump out of a moving vehicle? Or
I've had Giardia.
Yeah.
Drinking contaminated
water. That's no good.
No, that's no good. I've had a couple bear encounters that were pretty decent.
No kidding.
On the Appalachian Trail, I was in Shenandoah National Park, which is in Virginia National Park. Turned a corner, a mom bear and two cubs right in front of me, probably 25 feet. I stopped. She stopped, took a big sniff. Turned around. She took off at one cub. The other cub ran right up the tree next to the trail. I got to get a couple pictures of this, you know. They say never get between a mom bear and her cub. I snapped a couple pictures and down the trail. And then when I was on the Pacific Crest Trail, especially the last 2,000 miles, the first 650, I was walking with a girl named Lauren and a guy named Robert, who were really way younger than me, but just cool people. But the last 2,000 miles, I basically walked solo. Camping one night by myself, 4 o'clock in the morning, I hear something digging like right outside my tent. And I know it's big. I can tell it's a bear. Woke up. I don't want to scare the bear, like yell, because black bears are really skittish. I don't want to yell because it is right on top of me almost. So I just did the old throat clear move and it heard me and it walked away. I hurried up, woke up, first daylight, tore my tent down, walked down the trail 500 feet. There's a cub running down the middle of the trail. And I'm like, oh, crap. I see the cub. It goes up the tree in the weeds. Mom bear stands up on her hind legs, and she's a big black bear. She's every bit of probably 400 pounds.
Wow.
But I yelled at her. Black bears are really skittish. If black bears have been eating human food or being fed by humans, they're really dangerous because they know humans will feed them, so they'll come at you. Wild black bears will run. So I just yelled at her, and she took off. This time, no picture of the cub because she was a really big black bear. So it was down the trail I went.
Dave, I bet you he's got some cool photos on that phone of his. A lot better than what we have.
I don't know.
That's a new phone. I actually
not if he's not. Yeah. Are you taking many pictures?
Oh,
not?
Absolutely. I blog every day, and I'll do a plug here. I blog. Yeah. Not every day. When I get into town, say I'm on CDT coming up here, I'm going to probably start the CDT probably around April 20th, depending upon the
snow. Okay, so that really is coming up.
Yeah. Oh, it's coming up fast. Yeah,
20 days or so, like 25, 28 days?
A couple of months, April 20th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No, that's all right. I'll blog when I get into town. Like I said, I'll do a plug here. My Facebook page is Mile One. That's O-N-E, Mile One.
With an ellipse afterward.
Yes, dot, dot, dot. Mile right. One.
Mile dot, One, dot dot, yes. dot, 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 where people can read your blog,
read my
keep
blog.
Up with you.
I blog whenever I'm in town. It could be 4 days, 6 days, 7 days. If I don't get to a town, people will get on my blog and be like, "Brad, are you okay?"
So about 2 months. In about 2 months, you're planning on taking off.
Yes, and I'm on there blogging right now because I'm preparing for that. Like, I show people my gear I use, music I listen to. Wednesday night, I'm going to do a speech with the Boy Scout troop of Staunton. So I'll blog.
Cool.
I won't blog that, but I'll put pictures.
All right. I'm curious. Like, what are you listening to?
Iron and Wine. who do I listen to? I'm a real folk music singer. What is her name? Sierra Eagleton. If you go on my Facebook page, you can see the songs I've been posting.
There you go.
They're not really popular.
Wilco, are you a big Wilco fan?
Wilco.
Not familiar.
No,
not I got
familiar
you.
With Wilco.
I got you.
All right. Shout out to Chris Hulme. For recommending you for this. She's one of your Facebook
absolutely friends. She's on my page all the time, and love her. Thanks for her doing this for me. I appreciate it.
Well, good luck on your next walk, man. We'll keep up with you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you get a good response and you'd like me to come back in and talk about the Triple Crown, I'd be more than welcome to come back.
Would you ever take a phone call at night on your progress if you ever got to a hotel?
I could do that. I'd be more than willing to update people.
Okay. And maybe at some point we could check in with the show and I could record an interview with you or something like that. If in the middle of it, if that works out. If not, we can wait till you're done.
Yeah, I'd absolutely. It's up to come you. Back. And if I could plug one more thing,
do
I'm
it.
Also working with a local writer, and we're going to writing a book is hard. We're writing a book. Writing a book is hard. It's harder than we thought. Not harder than we thought it was, but it's harder than I thought it was. This guy's a professional, so he knows where he's going with it. But we're writing a book. The book will hopefully come out around Halloween for the Christmas season. The book is going to be called Mile One.
Okay.
And it'll cover my life, a little bit of growing up in Staunton, circumnavigating the United States, definitely the Triple Crown, and maybe a few other stories we'll throw in there.
You'll have to come back and talk about that book too.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I'd love
you
to come back.
Come back and talk about the book, and intriguing, man. Good stuff.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me in, Dave.
Thanks so much, Brad Fiore and Shane Isbell. Mitchell, what do you want to say about Brad Fiore, man? That is crazy.
I'm lost for words. I mean, the guy's getting ready to walk 3,100 miles. And as I asked you, Dave, have you walked 3,100 miles in your life? I mean, that guy is amazing. And I'm actually very interested to follow his story and his progress.
I want to read that book.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's got some great stories to share.
Cool guy. Big thanks to partners Cassens & Sons, the number one place to purchase a Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, or Ram in the Metro East. If you're in the market for a new or a pre-owned car, check out Cassens inventory in person where they've been for 25 years or online at Cassens.com. Cassens has earned the highest ratings for customer service. Their expert staff is committed to making your car buying experience enjoyable, including convenient on-site financing. I've purchased 4 vehicles there. My daughter drives back and forth to IU in a Jeep, and my wife and I share a Jeep Grand Cherokee. With over 80 years of experience in the Metro East, Cassens is the clear-cut leader for quality, service, and customer satisfaction. Go see Steve, Cliff, Holly, Greg, Bob, Mike, Tony, or Trent today, including your former buddy, your current buddy, your former working associate. Let me welcome now to the studio John DePriest, Director of Golf at Sunset Hills Country Club. And, of course, I'm referring to Steve Lane.
Steve Lane, he's a good man.
Well, thanks for joining us today. It's a little bit cold for golf still. Still snowy. We had a terrible snowstorm last week, but Country Club is still busy this time of year, though, right?
Oh, definitely. You know, we're getting ready for the season, trying to get everything set to go, and if this snow's melting, we could possibly play this weekend.
I think I saw a thing on Facebook where somebody was having like a tournament this weekend, like a two-man scramble. I mean, everybody wants to get some golfers out there.
Yeah, people are got cabin fever. They're ready to go.
So you've been at the club since 1999, and you've been with the PGA since 1980.
That's correct.
It's been a long journey in golf for you.
It has, and I actually started working at golf courses when I was 14, so it's pretty much been my entire life.
And I'm not going to lie, you and I have worked together for a long time, so I know you personally, always enjoyed our work together, and I believe you told me at one point that your main sport growing up was baseball.
That's correct, yes.
And so you played baseball through high school?
I did.
So when did you pick up golf? Just by working on courses?
Well, it's kind of funny. I did because we moved a lot. My father worked for the government. It was one thing that I could do by myself that I didn't need four other people or 10 other people to participate. Then I got hurt playing baseball my sophomore year in high school, and I spent an entire summer with one hand in a cast. It kind of just changed my perspective on sports a little bit.
So you moved around a lot, you said, but how did you wind up in the Metro East?
I work for Arnold Palmer Golf Management. I came to Spencer T. Olin in 92 and moved around a little bit. I met my wife here, and we were in Knoxville, Tennessee for a little while and had an opportunity to come back to Sunset Hills Country Club in 99, and we came home.
And a big part of your job as a golf pro is giving lessons to adults and organizing men's league and ladies league. But a big part of your job is also working with kids. And I think some people miss that with a country club golf pro. But you do a tremendous amount of work developing the game for kids. Talk about some of the things you're doing with kids in the area.
Well, kids are fun because they totally get whatever you do. They're not too judgmental when you do something silly. They think that's a lot of fun. But we really have focused on trying to expand our programs. We have our own junior program that we do every summer. We also are one of the nationally affiliated PGA summer camps that we hold three sessions, half day and full day, each summer. And we also are involved with PGA Junior League. Not the extent of Mike Surrey. You know, Mike is the king of how many kids he has, but we have a good program. We're going to host the Drive, Chip, and Putt sub-regional this year, so we try to do everything we possibly can to encourage that. I'm actually a member of the board of directors of the PGA Reach Foundation, and the three pillars of that are junior golf, military, and diversity and inclusion. So I try to do my part to encourage it. It is the future of golf is keeping the kids interested.
You're so right. If golf is going to stay relevant like it is, and I think Tiger Woods changed things, and I think numbers are huge right now. We've had so many golfers and multiple golf pros on here, and I think junior golf right now is bigger and better than it's ever been. Would you agree with that?
Oh, without a doubt. There's no question. Actually, it was one of the positive things with COVID because kids could not participate in team sports, but they could come to the golf course. You know, it was safe. It was outdoors. We did our best to maintain the social distancing aspects. And our junior numbers just were double this past year than they've been in the past.
I think it's very safe.
That was one thing I was going to ask you about is during the pandemic, what was kind of the effect on the on your usage of the course?
It was way up. Even with the limitations January through May, we didn't really get to open until about May 15th, you know, because of the different restrictions. But our play was still up about 70% for the year, even with losing the entire first quarter of the year.
It just shows there, Dave, how important the sport is at this time, like you said.
It's great. And golf, like I said, we've had so many good golfers. I feel like the really good golfer was almost an anomaly in the area. Like, yes, there were good golfers and good golf teams. But right now, I feel like there's a plethora. I feel like there's a whole bunch of them. You look at modern day golf champions last year, and Altaf finished second. I mean, that's big time. You had good Gracie Pyer at Marquette, and all the Edwardsville kids and all the O'Fallon kids. I mean, they're good. They're not just one season golfers. These kids are committed golfers who are gonna keep playing Division I, and the numbers are big too.
Yeah, well, I'm a firm believer that kids need to experience every sport, you know, kind of see where their niche is and which one they really like. But But once kids develop the knack, the passion for golf, they stick to it, and they pretty much becomes a the one basic sport that they do. But you mentioned Tiger Woods earlier. You know, Max Homa that won this week at Genesis credited Tiger to getting him started in golf. He was, I think, also a baseball player, but that he actually was in tears because Tiger presented him the trophy.
Wow.
And that was his idol growing up.
And you did a great thing, too, when you worked with Mike Surrey and also Spencer T to host that high school state golf championship, kind of last minute. You didn't have to do that, but you jumped in and committed the club's resources and your time to putting that on. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, Mike called me, and, you know, you can't ever say no to any of the Surreys because Mike, his dad, and even his grandfather have done so much for junior golf in this area and the whole Metro East area that when Mike called me and said, hey, would you be interested in doing this? I said, let me check. You know, give me one day. Let me contact the board, see what they say. Enthusiastically and totally unanimous, they said do it.
How about that?
It takes.
Kudos to the board. Kudos to the Sunset Hills Country Club board. And Corey Darr's not the president still, is he?
He is for about another month. But Todd Toma, Steve Gellmacher, Steve Dice, the whole Norma Belkoff, the whole board was 100% behind it.
Great.
Of course, Dr. Hightower is one of our board members. And, you know, they just anything that's good for the community, they're all for.
That's great. I'm glad you got a chance to mention all your board members.
John, I want to take you back a couple of years, the 2000 PGA Championship, 2018 in St. Louis. Had the opportunity to work that. I was out there all 7 days. Honestly, one of the best events I've ever worked in my career in sports. I know you were out there probably every day.
The Gateway PGA mans the driving range, the practice area, so I was out there 4 of the 7 days, yeah.
Just talk about that experience, because I remember I was working with the media, and I remember Tiger and Brooks, you know, fighting it out there at the end, and the crowds, I remember walking across the bridge there to watch the 18th hole, and that was something like I've never seen before.
It was definitely the surge of golf in the St. Louis region because everybody, I can't think of anybody that plays golf that didn't tell me they were there at least one day. I was fortunate on Sunday I manned the range tee, and it was my job to make sure that the players checked in and checked out. So it was pretty cool watching Tiger and the guys, Brooks warming up, Ricky Fowler, and there were so many people just watching them, you know, just watching them hit practice balls. Because they couldn't get through the masses and the throngs of people out on the golf course.
I love watching good players practice at anything. I'd almost rather watch them practice than play, personally.
Well, it's a unique sound. When they hit the ball, they strike it so solidly that there is definitely a different sound when they hit an iron shot than when we do.
No, there's a very different sound when I hit the ball too, John.
Yeah, yeah. Except yours is followed by four right.
Yeah, something like that. And it's the sound of the club smacking into the dirt or the ball going into the water. But all jokes aside, so you've done so many great things with kids, but I think maybe the greatest thing, I don't know, is your work with Folds of Honor. The money that you raise to benefit the dependents of military heroes in the two-state area is really inspiring. You raised $165,000 in 2018 alone. How many years have you had this program?
We started in 2017 when we got serious about it. I was at the PGA show, and I happened to listen to a Cracker Barrel session with Major Dan Rooney and Bob Phelan, who was the CEO of Cobra Puma at the time. And they were talking about how inspiring it is and how beneficial it is for country clubs to involve themselves in the community, you know, and how do you do that? And I was in actually the Puma booth later that day. Mr. Phelan walked by. I talked to him for a little bit, and he issued me a challenge. He said, if you can raise $25,000 for your charity, I will create an ensemble for every one of your players. He gave all of our players a pair of shoes, shorts, hat, shirts, the whole thing. Well, you know, it kind of unnerved me a little bit. $25,000, that was a pretty big commitment on my part. But on the plane ride home, my wife, Tracy, and I came up with this draft of what we thought we could do. I called my Puma rep, Matt Branska. He said, let's do it. I made about maybe 10 phone calls. And within 2 days, we had $17,000 already committed. There's some wonderful people in this community Hepler Broom across the street is one of our biggest benefactors. There's a lot of veterans in this area that come from, go to Scott Air Force Base and then stay here. Because the school district is so good, people just migrate to Edwardsville. The community kind of bought into it. You know, everybody did, and it's pretty overwhelming. You know, we've had support from the high school chorus. They come and sing the national anthem every year. The SIUE ROTC program comes and holds the flag sticks on 9 and 18 for the players. And it's our tournament, which you mentioned earlier, that they play 45 holes in one day. They play five different formats, nine holes each. Each nine represents a different branch of the military. And it's basically just a appreciation for them because since 2017, we have raised almost $600,000.
Oh, wow.
And provided over 40 scholarships to dependents of military heroes from Missouri and Illinois. 40 scholarships.
Yes. Yeah, that was one of our stipulations, two folds of honor, is that we would like the money to stay here. We wanted the money to stay in Illinois, Missouri, that we raised so that it would benefit the dependents of these military heroes here in our area.
Do you have a date for the event for this year, or is it like a lot of things where you got to kind of wait and see what's going to happen with COVID?
We've got set for August 30th this year, and we've kind of expanded on what we do a little bit. We've formed our own charity called the Five Star Heroes Charities. We want to add to a little bit to the people that we donate to. PJ Hope is one of our other huge organizations we try to support. Hope stands for Help Our Patriots Everywhere, and it's more for the guys that haven't been disabled or killed in action, which is kind of folds main genre there. But PJ Hope helps. Like I go every Thursday to the VA hospital and work with the veterans there. We have a beginner's golf clinic we do every week. Mike Surrey's involved, Mark Marcuso, Kevin Schaefer from down at Ann Breyer, and Brian Main from Whitmore. We pretty much have been doing this for about 7 or 8 years.
Every Thursday?
Every Thursday. Yeah, the program started with about 6 guys. Before COVID and the VA shut us down last year, we had about 80 in the program. So, yeah, go every Thursday from 1 to 3, 2 hours every day, every Thursday.
Could you possibly pinpoint what it was about you that made you want to do this philanthropic effort? Was there one particular moment in your life that made you look at soldiers and say, you know what, I want to help?
Yeah, a couple things that come to mind. Number one, my father was a 82nd Airborne paratrooper. He talked my grandmother and letting him enlist when he was 16 because he was out of school early, and it really was a big element of shape in his life. And then when I was just a kid, I was 8 or 9 years old, my next door neighbor was the high school All-American. You know, played every sport, was always the one that took the little kids with them to get ice cream, or if his buddies were playing basketball, we were invited to play. You know, we just were part of the program. He enlisted in the Marines the day after he graduated from high school, and he didn't see his 21st birthday. He was killed in Da Nang in about 3 years after being in service. So that I hadn't really thought about that much until we started, you know, getting a little more involved with this, and it really kind of got to me that, you know, that was something that really I had a passion for.
You have a strong sense of patriotism. It's obvious with this philanthropic effort, and I'm not a veteran, but thanks. You know, thanks for what you're doing for these soldiers, because people like you that are thanking them, I know that goes a long way for them and great for the community. And as a fellow employee at the Country Club, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't really helped out with your program, but I'm going to commit to doing what I can for you this year. I don't know if I can get my teams out there to help you out somehow, but we can get together somehow and I can support you. Or we can support you through the podcast. How can people contact you if they want to help with your golf event this year?
Just call us, and we have a number of different ways that they can get involved. We have a Patriot Golf Day series that we do as well. There's one a month all summer. It's $49 for them to play. The club has graciously permitted that a good portion of that amount goes straight to one of our charities. We also do a 100 Holes for Heroes 100 hole marathon in June that my assistant Nick Jones and I play and ask for donations for, and that alone raised almost $15,000 last year.
All right, folks. So we can do some donations or some sponsorship, or we can at the very least get out there and play some of these days. Chris Mitchell and I used to play golf. Remember about 1994, Chris?
We did.
Chris is a good golfer.
I was a decent golfer. Unfortunately, get older, you know, you don't get out as much, and you know, take up other things like running and a little tennis every now and then, Dave.
But well, you got me feeling patriotic here, John. I appreciate the work you're doing there. So pleasure to work with you, and I guess I'll see you again this summer out at the club.
I hope to see you out there on the golf course, not just the tennis court.
I'm going to get out there and play some golf. I started last time I played golf, I played so well that I got to keep playing.
You got to keep going, Dave.
I don't know what happened.
Well, we've got a great community here. The whole Metro East has been very supportive of everything we've done, from junior golf to our military endeavors to anything that we do, and I just want to give a big shout out to them. So it's been a unified effort for everybody for us to be so successful.
Well said. John DePriest, thanks so much for coming by tonight.
Thank you much, guys.
Thank you, John.
If you are looking to buy or sell a home in the Metro East on the Illinois or Missouri side, please give our partners at Keller Williams Marquis, Jeb and Ginger Blasingame, the chance to serve you. They have offices in Waterloo, O'Fallon, and Edwardsville with more than 130 agents. The Blasingames are a family-owned business that has helped over 5,000 families find just the right home. The Lipes are one of those families. Jeb and Ginger sold our house quickly because they are experts at staging and pricing, and they helped us find the perfect home, and they can do the same thing for you. No wonder they're ranked in the top 10 real estate teams in North America. Top 10 North America, Chris, can you imagine?
That's not bad, Dave.
Lofty company. Yes. Give Jeb and Ginger Blasingame a call today at 618-578-9276 if you're even considering buying or selling your home. Or check them out online at blasinggamegroup.com. You will not be disappointed. And he was a heck of a goalie, too, at Grand City High School. You knew that, right?
Yes, sir.
Basketball and track.
G-City.
Jeff Creek from Belleville East High School up next. And now for our last guest of the night, Chris. We've got the head boys basketball coach of the hottest team south of I-80.
Dave, they're hot. The Lancers of Belleville East.
5-0, outscoring their opponents 284-228. Welcome to the Metro East Sports Podcast, Coach Jeff Creek.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Belleville East, man, you guys are tearing it up. First place in the Southwestern Conference.
Yeah, we're playing good basketball right now. I mean, the kids are really working hard. We were just so excited to be able to have a season, and then it came on us quick, but the kids have been playing great, and we're really proud of them right now.
And the team, you've been there since 2017, and you have coached against some of the best teams in the state, because the Southwestern Conference is a very difficult conference in which to compete.
Yeah. I mean, I coached the 2 years when Belleville West won the 4A state championship, and then I also, one of those years, also East St. Louis won the 3A state championship. So, yeah, I mean, the conference has been loaded, but, I mean, it's been good. It's been good for, I mean, shoot, the last 8 or 9 years, it's been really good. But it's great competition. I feel like we're finally kind of starting to get the recognition that we deserve from up north.
Yeah, some people would say it's been a good conference for 50 years, man, going all the way back to the 50s. You know, West and Collinsville and Edwardsville had really unbelievable teams during that era.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I mean, Collinsville goes way back. I mean, I was around Belleville East when Bob Bone was the coach, and he always did a great job. And I mean, they've had a couple All-Americans, a lot of state championships. I mean, what the winningest program of them in Centralia are always competing for it. So yeah, I mean, there's a good history with our conference, and it's very competitive every single year.
Coach Creek, you've so far 5-0, like we said, wins over Eastside, Edwardsville, Alton, Belleville, West, and Collinsville. I want to talk a little bit about this defense. A lot of coaches out there, high school and college basketball, Dave, they say defense wins championships. Coach, you're giving up 45.6 points a game. You've held 3 of 5 opponents less than 40 points. Defense wins championships. Would you agree, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, defense has always been what we focused on, but especially in this type of season with COVID and with everything, nobody could really get their offense. But so we really had to sit back and just base everything on our defense. And it's a good team defense. And we have a bunch of athletic kids, but They work together. They work as one unit. And that's really what's carried us to this hot start.
Ethan Brown, 16 points a game. Jordan Pickett, 12 points a game. Allen Mason, 8 points a game. You got a couple young guys scoring the basketball for you, but Ethan, the senior, leading the way, almost 17 points a game. Talk about those three.
Yeah, Ethan's been great for us. I mean, he went to Althoff his first couple of years, so he transferred over last year, and he was first team all conference for us last year. But he's really just become a better leader as well. I mean, kind of leading and helping out the younger guys. And in my opinion, he's the best guard in the conference. He's so quick, so athletic, and he's just a great student of the game as well. And then Jordan Pickett as a sophomore, I mean, he started for us every game last year and really kind of built that confidence throughout the year last year. And he's really come out and shot the ball well. And the good thing is he's being more aggressive and getting to the basket. And then Allen Mason as well, he started getting a couple minutes for us last year towards the end of the year, but he's really stepped up on all ends. I mean, not just scoring, just defense and rebounding, because he's an undersized guard for a small or undersized small forward, but he's really working hard and doing some good things for us. And also Bryson Ivey and ZJ Hamilton have been huge for us as well.
Checked out some of those, some of the rankings. I know a lot of coaches don't necessarily like to talk about rankings, but as Dave mentioned early on, you guys right now currently rank the top team south of I-80 at 5-0, ranked 11th in Class 4A. What's your thoughts on that, Coach? Or are you just preparing for the next game?
Yeah, we're just preparing for the next. I mean, the rankings are nice. I mean, it's good to get some recognition for your program, but these games are coming so quick. We're just on to the next. We're focused, and we just got done watching film for East St. Louis tomorrow night, and then we go O'Fallon Wednesday. So we're just focused on the games. We don't put too much focus on the rankings.
Talk about coaching in front of no fans. I predicted, we've had a couple basketball coaches on the show, and I told them, I predict that you're going to love it as a coach, because now the players can hear you, and now the players aren't looking up into the stands. What's been your take on coaching without fans?
Yeah, when we first kind of came out, I was just worried about the kids being able to get themselves pumped up, you know, but they were so excited to play and have a season that they have been bringing energy. But yeah, I mean, as from a coach's perspective, I wish everybody could see the game, but you're right. I love it because I can say something to my kids. They can hear me. Even when I have my mask on, it's so quiet in there. We haven't had cheerleaders as well. So all that kind of background noise is gone. And it's just really more focused on the game itself.
Coach Creek, what were the expectations going into this season? Obviously you started 3 months late. You know, I should have seen you at the Collinsville tournament like I do every year. One of the best tournaments, I think, in the area and in the state. I've seen the Lancers there many a times. But what were your expectations going into the season, knowing that, you know, no state championship at the end of the year and, you know, your first game's not till February 6th?
It's just kind of different because we got that notice about 2 weeks before that saying the base of the season was dead. So our kids are kind of trying to come to grips with that. And then all of a sudden they said, we're going to have a season. And the expectations really were, I want to get my seniors some film. You know, I want to get them, make sure they can go on if they're capable to play college basketball. That was kind of our main focus. But then we just had to get it ready. And we had a lot of guys coming back. So I knew we'd be okay. I knew they knew a lot of the offenses that we were running in our defense. So you were excited. But then I was excited for the season for about 2 days, and then I had to say, okay, now we got to get down to work and get prepared for the season. And, I mean, it's come quick, and, I mean, we only have 3 weeks left of
it. Are the kids getting better as the season's going along? I got to believe that every week you feel more comfortable with running a particular offense.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's with every team we've played. Nobody's shooting the ball that well because the kids are trying to get their legs back. I mean, they went from doing basically nothing to a full weeks of practice and 3 games a week. And so some teams are going to peak at different times. And that's what I think we'll see the best basketball. We have a conference tournament at the end of the year. I think that's when we'll see the best basketball because all the teams will kind of come into form.
So has there normally been a conference tournament?
No, there's never been a conference tournament. This is just kind of like, we're doing in lieu of having like a regional. So it's basically, we're going to seed it. And once you lose, you're out. They're not doing like a third place or a fifth place game or anything like that. So, I mean, it's just kind of something to build towards, and it's something that everybody's looking forward to doing.
So there's definitely not going to be a regional or a sectional for basketball this year.
No, that is definitely not happening. Our season has to be over with on March 13th. That's our last day of basketball.
So your conference tournament will feel like state to you.
Yeah. I mean, we'll go. I think it's 11th, 12th, and 13th is the tournament, it's something. It's kind of something cool to book in the season with, and gives the kids something to build towards. And I mean, our conference is so competitive. It's basically like a regional anyway.
Absolutely.
The only difference is that East St. Louis will be playing it when they're normally 3A instead of 4A.
Right.
Coach, where's that conference tournament going to be held?
It's going to be the higher seed hosts the game. So, and then they're just going to kind of go from there, and hopefully we can get everything done with the scheduling, and because we've got the girls doing the same thing as well.
I actually, Coach, I don't know if obviously that'll continue, because I know that conference championships are not held in basketball, but you know, a great conference like the Southwestern Conference, how fun would that be if they would continue this for girls and boys basketball moving forward?
Yeah, it would. I like it. I love the conference championship. I think it's a good way to end the season. The only problem with it is that our regionals basically a conference championship. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you really break it down. So, I mean, and so many teams are in the Collinsville tournament or in our tournament that if you do have a conference championship, you could end up playing a conference team four or five times a year.
Wow.
That's the only drawback to having it.
And that's not that much fun. You want to play the teams in the conference a couple times. That makes sense. But nobody wants to play somebody five times.
Exactly.
I get it. Makes a lot of sense to me. So are you a teacher there at Belleville East?
Yeah, I'm a history teacher at Belleville East. Yeah, I've been here 14 years, I think it is now.
Outstanding, Coach. Good work. And where are you from originally?
I'm from Belleville. I actually attended Belleville East High School.
Okay, because you were there during the Bob Bone days, you said.
Yeah. And that's when Doug McCrary was our head coach. And so I played for Doug. And, yeah, I mean, it was – so I've been – kind of had my roots in Belleville my whole life.
Boy, Coach, taking it back to the 90s with some of those Belleville East teams with Clint Seitz and McCrary and Malcolm Hill. Boy, some great basketball was played.
Yeah. I was coaching here when Malcolm was here. And then I was like, when they had like Josh Helbig and Eric Green and Clint Seitz, I mean, Larry Scheller, they'd go 5 for 5 and put up 100 points on the board. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. And that's, you know, we're just trying to build and get back to that level of play.
Coach, I got one question for you. I want to put you on the spot here.
That's
fine. Do you think we will see, and Dave, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this too. Will we see a shot clock in high school basketball in Illinois anytime soon?
Sure hope so. That's what I want. I mean, and I think a lot of the conference schools want it as well. It's just the big obstacle that I've seen is making sure every school can get one put in. Because some of the schools are so old, like running the wiring and doing all that stuff can be a pretty costly expense. But it's got to, for the betterment of the kids, especially ones that are going on and playing in college, it just seems like a natural progression to have a shot clock in high school basketball.
You need a sponsor. Get a sponsor for that shot clock.
Dave, what's your thoughts on the shot clock? Do you think there should be a shot clock? Because we've seen some basketball in this area, and I know since you've been teaching at Edwardsville, we've had some very low-scoring games.
I think coaches will adapt to whatever rules are set out there. Good coaches will adapt to whatever you do. If you add a shot clock, coaches will change how they coach. They'll change their offense. They'll change their defense. And as long as you don't have it, good coaches will take advantage of that too. So I'm glad to hear that you say that you want the shot clock, because I think most fans would want the shot clock, Jeff. Don't you think that the fans would benefit most from that? I don't know if the players want it. I don't know if the coaches want it, but I think fans would like it.
Oh, fans would love it. I mean, because you have some of these, you know, these national shootouts or different tournaments, and they do a shot clock. And it just – and honestly, with a shot clock, it brings more strategy into the game. I mean, you're under 2 minutes and you're down by 2 points. You don't necessarily have to foul, you know, because you can wait. You can play good defense and try to stop them for the shot clock. I mean, it's it's just becomes, it slows the game down so much at the end when it's just foul after foul and putting people on the free throw line because there's no shot clock in place. And we actually tried it. I mean, this was years ago. We had it in our tournament 1 year. We had the shot clock. And believe it or not, it doesn't affect that much. Most teams get a shot up before whatever you're going to put it at, 35 or 40 seconds. I just think it would really help the end of the games to make them more competitive where somebody's not just stalling the last 3 or 4 minutes.
Well, it's obvious that your kids are talented this year. It's obvious your team is good. And I know if I asked you for words to describe them, I'm sure you'd say talented. But besides talented, how would you describe this group of kids?
First word, I mean, they're hardworking. And they work together. Like I always tell them, they play for one another. They're happy when another person's scoring, even if they're not. They're always making the extra pass. I mean, they're a true team. And they've really, like, I mean, and I think with, like, the COVID and all the obstacles they've had, that even brought them closer together, where, yeah, we have our leaders and we have our leading scorers, but every single kid that steps on the court does his part and makes us a better team. And that, and there's so much fun to coach when it's like that. When you don't have the egos and you don't have the selfishness and everybody's working together, it makes my job really, really easy.
I'm glad you mentioned the word fun. Is this the most fun you've had during your tenure as a head coach at East?
Yes, by far. Because you didn't have the buildup like you normally have before the season. You know, you didn't, and even, you know, 3.5-4 month season can be a grind after a while. We were so happy to play. And then being able to coach this great group of kids, it's the most fun I've had by far. And that's regardless of wins or losses. I mean, they're just a good group to coach.
That's cool. That's really, really great. We're talking to Jeff Creek, head basketball coach at Belleville East High School and history teacher. So do you ever give the kids like a good pregame analogy, historical analogy? Do you tell them this is like when Alexander took elephants into Carthage or anything like that? Do you ever give them that kind of historical stuff?
No, I leave it strictly to basketball when I'm doing that. I mean, but I do. I mean, I do enjoy teaching history, and the thing about coaching is it's just another stage of teaching. You're just doing it in a different area, you know, and you're talking about different things, but you're still teaching these kids. You're still teaching about life. You want them to become better men. And so teaching the classroom and on the court, like that's just what I love to do. And even though I leave the history analogies and different things like that out of it, I mean, you see a lot of similarities between the two.
Makes sense. Well, Coach Creek, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight on the podcast. And I'll be rooting for the Lancers for the rest of the year. It'll be tough for me when you're playing against my Tigers again, but you're having a hell of a year so far, and I wish you the best of luck, and I'm going to be keeping up with you. We'll have to talk to you again this year, okay?
Definitely. I appreciate it, you having me on.
Coach, good luck, and hopefully I'll see you down in Granite City, hopefully, this year for a game.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. That was Jeff Creek, boys basketball coach at Belleville East. He's having a good time. His team is good.
You know, it's interesting to hear him talk about just how much Dave, he's talking about how much fun he's having this year. Obviously, this is a tough year to be a coach, a player. But they're 5-0, and you know, I got kudos, respect for the Southwestern Conference. Been so many great players in all sports, and to see that he's 5-0 and he's played everybody once already.
And I think it's cool that at different times, how many teams in the Southwestern Conference were the best boys basketball team? Yep. Belleville West dominated for a couple years. Edwardsville got to the Final Four. Belleville East this year. O'Fallon has been excellent. Alton has been excellent.
Collinsville's won a ton.
Collinsville was the best team in the conference last year.
For a long time.
For a long time. And so there's so much parity in the league that I think that's what makes it fun. And if this is East year, great. Good for them. Mm-hmm. Fun coach. Cool guy. Looking forward to watching that team play. Have you seen them play?
I haven't seen them play. As I mentioned earlier, they were supposed to play Granite City Thursday, but they had a snow out in the Southwestern Conference. Granite City not a member of the Southwestern Conference right now, so they're actually making up a game. But I think the Warriors and the Lancers will tangle later in the season, Dave.
We'll see. Well, that's been it. As always, the guests make the show. Big thanks to Andy Callaway. Thanks to Chris Mitchell. Thanks for joining us tonight, Chris.
I had a great time, Dave, and thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Brad Fiore was an awesome guest, and his friend Shane, John DePriest from Sunset Hills Country Club, and then lastly, Jeff Creek, Belvalise boys basketball coach. And for partners, Pin Oak Agency, Cassins & Sons, Keller Williams Marquee, Jeb and Ginger Blasting Game. Big thanks to our producers, Brian Kroc and Everett Hicks, and our intern, at Zoogie J. Give him a follow on Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Metro Esports Podcast, talking all things sports in the Metro East.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.